with Aaron, Polly, and Wayne. I'm Aaron.
This is Paul.
This is Wayne.
Guys,
and welcome to the world of the future.
I tell you what, we're here. We are in the Discord. It's crazy. You know,
we did not pod fade after all.
You know, I mean, there was some serious money betting that we were done. Yeah, yeah.
I was looking forward to being done. Just saying. No, just I was going to retire off into the sunset, off like Bruce Banner. Yeah.
Sleep in on Saturday mornings.
If we were done, I don't think I would buy weekly comics.
I don't think I would either. I would save up for the trades. Yeah, I'd be a trade guy. Yeah, but I love you boys. I have to come and chat with you guys in the treehouse.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad we're back.
Uh-huh. Yeah, boy, did you hear that pause that I'm sure he'll edit out? Wow. Wow. But yeah.
No, that's great. This Discord thing, so we're recording on Discord, obviously, a little inside baseball. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. It's all new.
Like Moses, Wayne led us through the wilderness to the promised land of the Discord. So, you know, here we are, discordant.
So this episode sounds different. Blame Wayne. Actually, blame Skype, because they crapped out on us.
They abandoned us.
If it sounds better, blame Wayne. If it sounds worse, blame Skype.
There you go. But Wayne, did I see correctly that you were at a comic book type convention this weekend?
I was. It was a brand new one in St. Louis called Two Rivers Comic Con. And a buddy of mine, Mike Brodor, was one of the, not organizers or coordinators, but he works for a company that was one of the main sponsors. Hmm. And so he was working the convention the whole time. And basically, it's their first year. They're still learning things, still getting their venues down, all of that. But I had a lot of fun just talking to the creators, because I love small conventions where, you know, you have a chance to, without a crowd, go up and actually talk to creators. But also, I love that I both love and hate the fact that everyone ignores the creators to go directly to the voice actors or regular actors. It means right. I can have a 20-minute conversation with creators that are huge to me, but it also it's sad because you got like, here is Mark Bagley, Phil Hester, Andy Parks. You have the people that created Spider-Man 2099, you know, Carnage, all of these major characters there, and people don't seem to give them the attention they deserve.
Yeah, that's always rough when there's a creator that you admire and you feel like there's not enough interest in that person. I mean, I've told the story before running into a writer that I really enjoyed and buying her book all over again so that I could just sit down and chat with her and occupy her time because, you know, there was nobody. I mean, like literally nobody in front of her table.
Yeah, and the panels were great. There was one panel was basically two creators talking together, which was Andy Parks and Phil Hester talking about their working on Green Arrow with Kevin Smith, getting them to talk about a few other books. One of the interesting things with him is I was talking with Phil Hester about the fact that he took over writing after Straczynski left Wonder Woman. Mm-hmm. So he was the one that had to pick up on that Wonder Woman story that is almost universally hated that Timmy and I both loved. And he had to pick up the pieces writing wise and finish it off. So they talked a little bit about how even for stories that seem to be so universally hated, there's always one person out there that seems to enjoy them. I was that one person.
And, you know, Oh, I do. I was going to say, I once met Glenn Cook, and I felt the same way. Not comic, he's a novel writer, but I was at Archon in St. Louis, and he had a table, and he was all alone. There was nobody there, and I owned all of his books, but I went and just bought another one just so I could stand there and talk to him for,
That's exactly what I did with Ardith Mehar. I bought her book again and had her autograph it and just sat there and visited with her for probably half an hour.
I think the two coolest things for me that came out of the convention, the first was at the panel, the Spider-Man panel, actually. Mark Bagley talked a little bit about Thunderbolts because he was the artist that designed all of the character designs and talked about you know, if you ever wondered why Moonstone was always naked in the book and you never saw Songbird naked, it's because he designed Songbird to look like his niece.
Well, it begs the question, who was he thinking about when drawing Moonstone?
That's a good question.
And ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Andrew to the show.
I'm just curious.
Yeah. The other big highlight is I bought a commission, which is the first time I've done a commission from a artist that I actually knew and was excited about. I got a commission of Ricochet from Phil Hester. So I have a drawn and inked Ricochet.
That's pretty awesome. Next time I meet Phil Hester, I'm going to ask him for a picture of you.
I want a Wayne.
Really cool to me, too, was he talked about how, well, he's drawing the character. People kept coming up and asking about the character. I had told him he wanted to know about the character ahead of time. So I had told him kind of all about the character. So he would know how the character moved, things like that. And so he was able to talk to people about my character.
That's funny. I've got two Phil Hester pieces. I've got a Green Arrow smoking a cigar, and then I've got a Commandy that he did for me.
Yeah, he was so cool to talk to, too.
Yeah, he's a good guy. I like him.
Did he do the most recent Commandy book?
No, he did the Commandy during one of his Jack Kirby birthday celebrations where he was doing like 100 Kirbys or something. So, you know, you could enter into a drawing. And if he selected your name and he liked the character, he'd draw it for you. And then you'd make a donation to this charity he was supporting.
Very cool.
Yeah. One of the things I asked the artists on the different panels were how much they got to do the design versus how much the writer came in and dictated things. For the most part, Kevin Smith, they said, was an incredible collaborator. Onomatopoeia, he had a vision for and he told them what to make it look like. But other than that, they were able to create all the characters. Bendis, apparently, during Ultimate Spider-Man, the only character he came in and said, this is how he looks, was the Green Goblin.
For the Ultimate books.
Yeah, for the Ultimate book. And Bagley talked about how he's like, I didn't get it. When he said, the character should be naked, but have like rag coats. He's like, I just did not get it. And I had to draw 14 or 15 different versions before it landed on something that he found acceptable. And I always hated that design.
Oh, that's a terrible design. I've always hated that design too.
Well, and that's kind of cool to learn that that wasn't his fault.
Yeah.
That all of the other characters he designed when it came to the villains, but the Green Goblin was entirely Bendis's fault.
Well, as are most things.
Well, not anymore, because when was the last time any of us read a Bendis book? A new Bendis book, let me clarify. Revisited one from the glory days.
Long time.
Yeah, well, but right as the convention was ending, I had really sad news. And it was after I had left, so I didn't get to talk to any of them about it. Because a lot of the creators had worked with Peter David, who is no longer with us.
Yeah, he passed away yesterday. Has been in poor health for a very long time. And I actually saw a GoFundMe out there because he had been on Medicaid to help him with activities of daily living, that sort of thing, and had lost his Medicaid eligibility. And so living expenses and medical expenses were really racking up. And so they had started up another GoFundMe for him because after he had had his like first big stroke, there was a GoFundMe at that time, too, because as we all know, comic books really doesn't have a benefits plan. Right. So anyway, he apparently had some trouble breathing earlier in the week and they got him on a ventilator and his numbers were improving. And then I was not able to discern what ultimately happened, but, you know, passed away over the weekend. I'm just that floored me when I saw it. I have Peter David's been a favorite writer of mine for a very long time. He's the guy who got me back into comics. His run on the Hulk is way back, you know, when I had taken a break from comics due to financial limitations back in the 90s. And, you know, I thought, well, take a look at this comic book. And it was one of Peter David's early runs on the Hulk. And I just loved it. And that's what got me whole hog back into comics.
I've always said if there's something you like about the Hulk, it was probably introduced by Peter David.
Yeah.
Because I mean, he had over a 12-year run on the character.
Oh, my God. It's insane.
It's such defining. And for me, when I think back at Peter David, one of the first things I read by him wasn't actually a comic of the Hulk. He did a novel of the Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
It was Incredible Hulk, What Savage Beast.
Yeah. Which you can get on Audible. There's a full audiobook of it.
Yeah, it was, I love the book. It was an introduction to a lot of those aspects because it's set right during his run of Incredible Hulk. And at the very back of it was a additional short story that he added in. If any of you remember when Marvel was doing the end books, where mm-hmm. they were talking about the end of each character, there was one for the Incredible Hulk where there were basically insects that would come through and eat him every day, and then he would heal up.
Mm-hmm.
That story was in the back of that book back in the 90s.
Oh, wow.
That's the one that they made the comic out of, was his story that was a extra short story in the back of Incredible Hulk, What Savage Beast. Because I remember reading the comics, like, wait a minute, I know this.
That's not one I'm familiar with, honestly.
I hadn't even heard of that book, really. So I will have to investigate, especially since it's on Audible. Thanks, Aaron.
Happy to help. Happy to help. I saw it yesterday because I went out there to go see what books they had of his, because I haven't read anything new from Peter David in a very, very long time. But, you know, Peter David, you know, he obviously, you know, a great comic book writer, but was also, you know, very entertaining in the novels that he wrote. I read a lot of his stuff while my wife was in the ICU for such a long time, you know, almost 20 years ago. And it got me through a really rough time, you know, being able to connect with those characters. And it just kind of felt like Peter David was there with me, you know, taking me through this very stressful time. And so when I ran into him at Wizard World Texas, I shared that story with him that, you know, his novels got me through just a really very dark and scary period. And I'll always treasure his work and him for getting me through that.
Yeah, he has over 100 novels. Some of them are adaptions based on things like Babylon 5. He did a bunch
Doctor
of
Who
adaptions,
yeah,
and things like that. But some are just, he did his own series that had nothing to do with comics.
Sir, apropos of nothing.
Yeah, Cyman, Photon, Sir mm-hmm. Apropos of Nothing. And a lot of those he wrote as David Peters.
Yeah.
That was a interesting pen name. Peter David becomes David Peters.
Yeah, Peter David's got a great origin story. He worked in Marvel sales and was desperate to become a comic book writer and would do anything he could possibly do to you know, break the barrier between the business side and the creative side. And I've just always been amused by that, you know, he went to work in comics and sales so that, you know, he could become a comic book writer.
It is interesting how many of his comic books, like novels that were about comic characters, actually ended up eventually getting adapted into comics.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I see the Last Avenger story. Yep. Apparently he wrote it as a novel back in 1995.
Well, yeah, and you know, that reminds me of the story, the Avengers story that Jim Shooter wrote, because he originally wrote an Avengers novel that ultimately became like a great Ultron story in the Avengers title, like around 164, 165, something like that.
Sad. It's very sad his passing. Hopefully he's in a better place. It sounds like he's been uncomfortable for a while.
Well, his GoFundMe is still open as of this morning. I, you know, if Peter David's work was important or valuable to you, I would recommend going and make a donation of whatever you can offer, because I know his family is, you know, taking care of all of those end of life expenses right now. So really strongly encourage anyone who's so inclined to go over and do that.
Yeah, agreed. Well, you know, obviously starting off on a bit of a sad note, but we you know, we're back and a lot of stuff has happened. A lot of positive things have happened since we last recorded, including, well, I don't know if it's positive. We're about to find out.
Well, this is a holiday appropriate topic, Paul, because today we are recording today on Memorial Day.
Yes.
And what better time to think of those heroes who fell, you know, and their story chronicled in Andor, you know, we need to thank the rebels for their service.
Exactly. I am in memorial of the rebels that gave their lives to take down the first Death Star.
That's right. That's right. Mm-hmm. And the heroes of Yavin. Yeah. And all the other Death Stars.
that died.
Would a plural of Death Star be Death Star?
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah. Uh-huh. There are five Deaths Star.
Deaths Star.
It wouldn't be Death Stars.
No, I think it's Death's Star.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean,
Andrew sounds doubtful.
That seems to imply that the star belongs to death.
Doesn't it?
I mean, perhaps. Yeah. If death is a real person that can have ownership of something, perhaps. Mm-hmm. Is there a guy named Death? Is there a Darth Death?
Grand Moff Death.
Grand Moff Death. It's his stars.
That's right. That's right.
Okay, good. So it's D-A-T-H-S apostrophe star.
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
Yeah, like okay. Death's head.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I like it. I'm there.
And this has been Grammar with Aaron and Polly.
Yeah, just to check it out in the next version of the Oxford English Dictionary, you'll see all of that is correct. So have you guys all watched Andor to its conclusion?
Nope, I never watched the original, though.
Oh,
wow. I never made it past episode 3. I know it's supposed to get really good, and I'm going to give it another chance, but I hated the first episode.
It's so good.
It does get better, and I felt very much the same way, Wayne. And being honest, I felt kind of the same way about season 2 also.
Shut your whore mouth, Paul.
No, not all of season 2. Like, the first arc of season 2, like the first 3-episode arc, I was like, eh.
Felt slow.
Like a lot of navel gazing there.
The thing that I found challenging was the 3-episode release schedule. It was hard keeping up.
Yeah.
And committing that much time. And I felt pressured to keep up so that I wouldn't get spoiled. But
it's
I did
a lot. It's a lot to fit into each week to have that many episodes.
It is.
I'd much rather
your TV show. Like, yeah.
Yeah, I think it crowded out other. Yeah,
I think 2 is the right number because you can get 2 episodes in. That's not too much, but it's more than just being hung out with just a single episode, especially the beginning of the series. Yeah. So I think it winds up
being a 2.5 hours worth of viewing that you're committed to each week, and that was super challenging. But boy, I tell you, I really did enjoy this season. I got so connected to every character. Spoilers, Cyril and Dedra really kind of emerged as my favorite characters in the show. I very much enjoyed almost everything on the screen with Cyril and Dedra. And really, I think my only gripe about the show, not near enough B. You know, we abandoned B in the first 3 episodes and really don't get to see him again until the epilogue in the last episode.
Yeah, so he's okay. I was wondering, you know, like, because they just left him. And I'm like, well, that's so sad.
Well, and it just, at some point, can't you get B back? You know? But I guess B really isn't cut out for the rebel life. But boy, I was like, no, don't leave B. You got to take B with you.
Apparently not. Well, B's fine.
But I did like seeing him playing with the other droid in the epilogue, so... Yeah. But I have to tell you, you know, we follow Dedra and Cyril, who have got the most effed up relationship through this show. And, you know, you're like, are they really into each other? Or what is this? What is going on? And her bossing him to turn off the lights, you know, I was like, what is going on? She doesn't like the lights on. She doesn't like the lights on during. But I think she's fantastic. I want to see that actress in other things because I thought she was just fantastic. And when everything goes south for Dedra, and you know, gosh, I forget the superior officer's name who you know he was in Rogue One. God, I can't remember his name.
Krennic?
But yes, And he walks behind her and he stabs her in the top of the head with his finger.
That was great.
That was completely improv. You know, Yeah, oh. I read a thing on that he just did that. And of course, he's behind her when it occurs, and the look on her face is exactly, she just played into it. But I mean, it's just so domineering. You know, I love that. But you get to her ultimate destination in the show, and I was just heartbroken for her. I mean, she's this horrible person, and they really made me feel empathy for her, and I just think that's marvelous storytelling.
Yeah, I thought for me, I thought the first three episodes, the first arc of the first season and the first arc of the second season were too slow for me.
I felt really bad for Porco.
Porco. And I thought the last episode of the series, which is just by nature of what it is, you know, in that I was like, it didn't feel like the last episode of a series, right? It just felt like, okay, well, story's just kind of there. It's because it's leading into Rogue One, right? Rogue One is technically the series finale here.
And I immediately put on Rogue One after I finished that last episode. And boy, it does dovetail nicely into it.
Yeah, I need to. That's the thing. I definitely need to, to pop in Rogue One, especially because, they do such a good job of setting up these characters, Krennic, Cassian, K2SO, kind of what leads up to it. Obviously, it'll be a bit jarring because Jimmy Smits will be Bail Organa again, but that's okay.
But, I thought that I was going to object to that recast.
He did good. Benjamin Bratt did good.
Yeah, I thought Benjamin Bratt was much preferable to Jimmy Smits in that role.
Yeah, it's just because Jimmy Smits has been playing the damn role for 30 years, 25 years, right? Since episode one.
Yeah.
But no, I thought Andor was fantastic. And it definitely, both seasons seem to really sing in their third arcs. In the first season, it was the prison arc. And this season, it was the Gorman, the Gorman massacre arc, and both of those are really the high points of both seasons for me. The last three episodes released this week were really, there was some exciting stuff, right? There was, but for the most part, it was making sure that everyone's story wraps up.
Yeah.
And I really thought the way they and really mostly Luthien. How his story wrapped up. And I thought that was, an appropriate way to wrap up his story, given everything.
Oh, and that was that was heartbreaking as well. And getting the backstory of, I forget her name, but his assistant. Yeah, thank you. Boy, that was heartbreaking. I mean, just the whole thing and her having to break into the Citadel to, essentially kill Luthien so that they can't torture him to death and get, rebel secrets. The Gilroys just did a remarkable job. Tony Gilroy did a remarkable job writing this thing and the directing and casting. It was all fantastic. I love it. It's one of those things like, let Tony Gilroy do it all.
I would completely agree. It was a great second season, and watching Andor right after the finished was the cherry on top, because it is like the conclusion. It's like the big 2-hour movie finale to watch for the end of season two. So probably not going to be a season three of Andor. Just saying, kind of sad.
Yeah. Although Andor does have a child.
That's right. They're Cassian's got a little baby boy out there.
Of course, the fans are like, "Oh, is that Poe Dameron?" And no, because Poe Dameron's origin was already explained in a novel. Though,
Is that canon?
It's canon until it's not.
That's right. Correct. Until Disney decides there's more money to be made by doing another TV show.
That's right. Well, I wonder if maybe we could get an Andor prequel.
Prequel to the prequel to the prequel.
Just keep going back in time.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Let's actors learn more about Andor.
Older, they play.
Let's learn more about Andor, Cassian's father.
There you go.
Yeah.
Who was he?
Yeah. Well, we don't know, right? We don't know who his biologics are because of his orphan origins. So,
but if you incorporate time travel or the world between worlds, Poe Dameron could be Cassian's father.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, there's a twist.
No. I think what we really need is a Marva. We need a Marva prequel with, you know, her and the adventures of Bee.
No, see, the whole point is you set up all of these cool people that could be his father, and then you reveal he's really the grandson of the Emperor.
No, they already did that. They did that already. That was in the that was in the Skywalker trilogy.
You think that would stop them?
No, I mean that's the great line about Star Wars is you make everything exactly the same but different.
Exactly. But no, I mean Andor. It is prime television. It's prime Star Wars. I'm sad it's over, but also kind of glad that, you know, the story was told on their, yeah, I wouldn't say on their terms because it was originally, I think, planned for 4 seasons and they cut it down to 2, but I'm glad they at least had a beginning, middle, and end. We have the full story. I'm happy, you know, with how it wrapped up.
And the great thing is, I mean, it's a super expensive show, but I have to say, I thought it looked very cinematic. It looked like something you could see on the big screen.
Oh, yeah, especially, you know, with K2SO, you know, like they did a great job with his effects, not like She-Hulk, you know, like the K2SO definitely translated well to television in a way that full CG characters generally don't.
Yeah. Well, and the money is on the screen. I mean, I just thought it was exceptionally produced. And did I read that they're going to do an Andor at the movies?
Yeah, supposedly they are re-editing. I don't know what portion of Andor is being edited into some type of feature-length movie that will then lead into a screening of Rogue One. And I'm assuming, I don't know, does Rogue One, is that coming up on some type of...
It's coming up on an anniversary, like a 10-year or something.
Okay, 10 years, damn. Yeah, so it's being done in time for that. So yeah, 2016. So yeah, I'm assuming it's happening for next year.
Yeah, yeah, I'm down for that. Like, I immediately watched Rogue One when I finished Andor, and I saw online that Andor moved Rogue One to the number one movie on Disney Plus that week.
Oh, wow.
Because everyone was just, you know, immediately jumping in. So I love that.
I got to say, Andor is still my favorite Star Wars movie. Rogue One, still my favorite Star Wars movie.
I think it's fantastic. I think Rogue One is, for me, it goes, Star Wars, which is what some people call Episode 4, but I call it Star Wars. Empire and Rogue One. I mean, those are my three. So it's a trilogy, as you can see. Just, you know, prequel.
Yeah, Star Wars, I would probably mirror those.
Yeah.
I mean, you sit down and watch Rogue One, Star Wars, Empire.
Yeah, absolutely. There's my trilogy. Yeah.
And we forget the Solo ever happened.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you do miss out on that bikini, but metal chainmail bikini thing. But but I can live without that.
If you can keep, I like to consider Return of the Jedi as a short. It's a Star Wars short, and you just keep the Tatooine scenes. Everything else goes.
You see them, and then you move on.
Uh huh. Uh huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I love Return of the Jedi.
Yeah, but it's some fucking Ewoks, man.
Hate is such a strong word for any Star Wars movie.
Well, I mean, you haven't even approached real hate,
No, it's hate and Christians.
There's a lot there to despise.
Yeah, like Solo.
I love that.
I like Solo. Yeah, I did enjoy Same. Solo.
I regret that we haven't gotten more of that.
I hate Solo so much.
Whenever I hear someone mention the Lake Country, even in real life, I start breaking out in a cold sweat.
Well, Andor is over.
Sand people, Anakin, not sand monsters.
Well, and your Disney Plus subscription is now useless for another few weeks.
That's right. What's the next thing coming?
Ironheart?
Is it Ironheart? Yeah.
Yeah.
I've actually started rewatching all the MCU movies in the chronological order, not of which they were released, but as when they actually occurred.
Wow.
So I watched Captain America First Avenger. I watched Captain Marvel. And then I watched Iron Man. And I'm working my way.
Yeah, Paul, I still have one more week of new content coming for Disney Plus, the finale of Doctor Who.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even realize I was actively going still.
Yep.
Yeah.
The second season of the new Doctor.
Yeah, I haven't seen Friday's episode, but Wayne, did you love that episode with the kind of the social commentator think tank people with the shriek, screech?
Yeah,
screech.
I love the whole episode, but especially the reveals.
Yes, I think that's been my favorite episode of the first four. Again, I haven't seen this past week's yet, but yeah, very good season of Doctor Who so far.
Well, now that Andor is over, I've only got two more episodes left of Mobland. June is just going to be
Mobland. That looks good.
Mobland is so good. It starts off a little. The first episode I would say is not like did not sell me. I'm like, it's good. It's just good enough to give it the second episode. And then by the end of the second episode, I was hooked. So for those who don't know, Mobland was originally conceived. It is not currently, but it was originally conceived as a prequel to Ray Donovan, the Showtime TV show, I guess. Mm-hmm. With Liv Schreiber. And at some point they changed courses and produced its own thing. But it has Tom Hardy, Pierce Brosnan, Helen Mirren, and a couple of other actors that you'll, you know, recognize, but aren't like the names. Those are the names. And it's basically like a crime, you know, drama in Europe. And, you know, features Tom Hardy as like the fixer for, the mob led by Pierce Brosnan and Helen Mirren as his wife. And it's all the things that have gone wrong, you know, leading up to a mob war. And it's excellent. It is really, really well done. The first two or three episodes, I think, are directed by Guy Ritchie. Now, I don't know if that's a positive or negative for you. It doesn't feel like he directed it, but they are well directed. But it's a good show. I'm really enjoying it.
It looks good. I it is on my watch list. I just haven't gotten to it yet.
Yeah, episode 9 just came out. Episode 10 comes out next week, and then I will be in a drought, I guess, unless Ironheart is good at the end of June. But I'll have comics to fill that void, because there were a couple of new number ones this week. One of which I enjoyed. I bet you'll be able to guess that one pretty quickly.
I know. I know already.
It's because it's not the one you would think. The comic, the first issue that I enjoyed this week was Exquisite Corpses.
Oh, so good.
Image Comics, written by James Tynion IV, art by Michael Walsh.
Yeah. I need to thank Aaron for this one, because I would not have bought it if Aaron hadn't given his high review of it. And it is, at this point, it is in the running for favorite series of the year. I have to ask Andrew, though. Did you pick it up?
Yes. Yeah, no, I had it on my book to pick it up that Wednesday, but my local store had sold out before I got there. But I was in Iowa, went to a comic book shop there, and I was able to get a copy off the shelf.
Did you manage to get the polybagged version?
No. There only had one copy on the shelf left, so it's a variant cover, but it was not the polybagged one.
Yep. So this series is also going to launch. Initially, it's a 13-issue story arc, but after that arc, they're launching a trading card game that's a companion.
Yep.
And apparently, the C cover variants are all polybagged and include early editions of the cards. You can collect a killer card in each one.
So what I have, because it is on the copy I got, on the inside of the back cover is the playing card. So like mine for this show, I got the playing card for Lone Gunman. But I would have to cut my comic book up to be able to actually use it. I guess I could photocopy it and make something out of cardstock. But yeah, I think in the polybag, they come loose there where it's an actual card.
Yeah, and it's actually a playable one you can use in the game.
Yeah,
when nice. The game launches.
Yeah, so Exquisite Corpses, a couple of thoughts before we get into the thoughts on the book, right? So it's if you turn, the first page says it's season one, issue one. So they've definitely got a plan for this. I don't know what it looks like. They have one thing that I would have liked is some type of essay at the back of the book to explain their plan.
Yeah.
But so it is basically about the 13 families.
13 families that control America. 13 richest families that you know, the Civil War really wasn't about. It's about, it was really the richest families, the Illuminati of the United States, if you will, deciding who was going to rule.
Yep. And it, you know, every 10 years,
every 5.
Every 5 years, they basically take turns being, you know, when you have 13 alpha families, how do you determine who's the actual alpha, right? So every 5 years they have a tournament, where all 13 families pick a killer. And for one night, it's all about, it becomes about who, you know, who's the one that outlasts the rest or and kills the most. And that family becomes the head of the families for the next 5 years.
Yep. And except, so Andrew pointed out to us, they've only given us 12 killers.
Correct.
There are 13 families, but only 12 killers.
And I couldn't find anywhere in the book where they explain that discrepancy. My theory is that maybe the ruling family doesn't get to play.
That could be it. That
because he never.
I don't know if that's the case, or maybe one of the families got wiped out, and there's really only 12 families now. I have a feeling they'll share it at some point, but I didn't notice it until you pointed it out.
Well, they did mention at one point how Carolina wasted. Spent 5 years and weren't able to get anyone for the last tournament, and you know they were giving her a hard time about that. So maybe one of the 13 families weren't able to get a killer this time. You know, I haven't done it, but I should. I need to go through and account which states, because the 13 families are associated with the 13 original colonies.
Yeah.
And so I need to go back and figure out which colony is missing out of the ones that they've been in, which one doesn't have an identified killer.
Yeah. And so the meeting ground, you know, it's not like they're meeting in some type of enclosed arena. No, they close off a city somewhere in the United States.
Yeah.
A whole town.
Whole town that won't be missed.
Yeah. And so this time it's Oak Valley, Maine. And so we follow not only the 13 families as they gather for the tournament, but also, you know, some of the residents of Oak Valley, including a small family, and kind of how, you know, we're building up to how this night will impact all of them. And so the first issue, despite being, you know, mostly set up for the actual tournament, is 67 pages long.
It's crazy big.
It's so good, though.
Yeah. Triple sized.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It is a triple sized startup issue, or, you know, ramp up issue. And at no point does it feel slow. At no point, you know, it's kind of like, you know, when we watch the first episode of a TV show and we're like, probably should have released two episodes at the same time because nothing happens in the first episode. Mm-hmm. That's not how this is. Like, yes, it's all set up, but it's all really well done and very exciting.
Yeah.
Well, I love how they. Oh, good.
I was just going to say it's hyper violent.
It's going to be.
Well, like the shot where Lone Gunman, I think he's taking out Leopold Strong. I mean, goodness, you know, the artwork is amazing, delivering both really sort of visceral action as well as setting a tremendous mood. Right. I mean, it's and all the while, everything is well illustrated. You understand what the story is super effectively through the artwork. I love this book, and so many times you get a book this big and you feel like there's a kernel of a story here and the rest of it extra, and all of this was driving to the same story and setup. I mean, it felt very appropriate with setting up, you know, 12 different contenders and needing to give them each a little bit of narrative, explain what's going on with them. It all just felt very appropriate, and it would have been really easy for the textual narrative to be, you know, rather rote and repetitive, you know, giving you information about each character. But it wasn't. I it felt fresh all the way. I really think this is a super strong book. I would not have picked it up, but I clued in that it was James Tynion IV. Who I really like his work. And I was like, let's see what this is. And then I started thumbing through it, you know, on the preview pages, and it grabbed me. And that's why I picked it up. It really wasn't a radar book.
Yeah, curious for each of you, was there a killer that stood out to you? For me, the one I keep thinking about is Lady Carolina. The one where it is a member of the family herself that has stepped
in. Twin sister, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm a big, I'm excited to see what the Fox Mask Killer can do. It seems like there's some history between Carolina and New York and this specific killer from the Smack.
I keep having that, what does the fox say song?
Say. So yeah, for me, it's the Fox Mask Killer. How about you, Aaron? What killer speaks to you?
Yeah, the Lone Gunman. I know that that is kind of an easy answer because he's kind of the central character in this mm-hmm. first issue, but he really kind of grabbed me. I want to know more about his backstory.
Paul.
How about Paul?
I'm also Fox Mass Killer, probably because that's the character on the cover, but also, you know, it's a character. Oh, you know, because Andrew already chose it, I'll choose Rascal Randy. Rascal Randy is a character dressed in a bunny mascot costume who's a weapon of choice. So this is another thing, right, that the killers all have to have a select weapon of choice. The Lone Gunman obviously gets his gun, but some of them get knives, some of them get explosives. Rascal Randy is his bare hands. So he's a bunny mascot who will choke you out with his bare hands.
The pin is decided 1 year before the competition by dealing out one of the 13 cards in this deck that have, same set of cards that have been around since the very first competition. Gun does seem like it might be slightly better than the rest of the things in there. I mean, dynamite, explosives are pretty good. Gun's pretty strong too. I mean, yeah, it's going to be tough. Yeah.
Poison is going to be rough.
Yeah, Nurse Pete, I don't feel like Nurse Pete is going to stick around long in this competition. But I do love how...
There really is nothing more diabolical than it. Just saying. Yeah.
I do love how this book starts, though, with the paranoid conspiracy theory, who maybe not so conspiracy theory, gas station attendant.
Oh, yeah, right?
I love that guy. I hope he sticks around for at least half the series, because...
Yeah.
I feel like the more of his crazies are going to start turning out to be true in this comic book reality. Since we do know that the country is essentially run by 13 families, and you know that's a cold-blooded sheriff, man. That
he got the F out of town, and
Okay, here's my money. Here's my new car. Here are the keys to the town. See ya.
Here's my new identity. I am out. Yeah,
I love this. I am all on board. Yeah.
Yeah. This book is great. I just love it. And I'm really getting a kick out of the creators. You know, we saw Kieran Gillen do this with his books, turning them into role-playing games. And I love the, you know, sort of the cross marketing of it all, you know, with James Tynion IV creating a card game to go with his book. I think that's smart on these creator-owned books to, you know, kind of layer in your merchandising on this stuff. I think that's really clever.
Well, if this book does well, then they just move on to Exquisite Corpse's, you know, 2030 competition and with a new set of killers. Do you guys have the bracket at the back?
Yeah, I do.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it's so interesting they did a set of three because, you know, 12 is easily divisible by two. You could have had a standard kind of. But, yeah, having like four pools of three that then kind of collapse, it's interesting because it implies that we're going to see some sort of matchup between the Congregation and Layla Blue and Pretty Boy. And also, I mean, it seems like the Lone Gunman going against Lady Carolina in the next round is early. You feel like those would be two people that you'd see face off in the final match.
Yeah, those two feel like they have enough backstory to keep going through the entire series.
And perhaps this is not reflective of the actual that these combats will take place. But just if it is, it's interesting they're getting paired up against each other that early. Also, like for those at home, it's also a very video game where as the evening goes on, they will collapse the area of play and force the competitors, the killers, into a smaller and smaller geographic area until only one's left alive.
Yeah, well, and some of them we really haven't seen get to cut loose yet because they have to find their weapon.
Yes, I mean, Lone Gunman obviously had no problem finding his weapon stash real quick.
Yeah. But Rascal Randy needs his costume.
Yes, he does. I think that Paul picked Rascal Randy as his second favorite. That's intriguing to me.
Well, now, you know, it's turning around. He might be my favorite. The one thing that I will say is James Tynion IV has a Substack page. I don't know if you guys remember Substack when that was.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They were trying to ramp that up. And so he has a whole series of articles that I have not read yet. Let me clarify. That I have not read yet leading up to the launch of the book this past week. And so, you know, they've got articles about each one of the killers and things like that. So it might actually have some of the information we're looking for.
So there's the back matter you were looking for. Yeah.
Yeah, the back matter I was looking for. And apparently there is an exquisite corpses tour where him and the corpse crew have a signing tour across North America.
Shut up.
So there's a bunch of stuff. So I definitely recommend checking out his Substack if you enjoyed this book, because I have to go digging through it to see all the information that's on it, because I'm very curious. They talk about the game and everything.
I want to see if they're going to be anywhere close to me on this signing tour.
Well, I thought Exquisite Corpses was super great. Another book that came out that was in number one was not super great. Rather, it was super disappointing. And that is Superman Unlimited number one, Dan Slott's return to DC and return to Superman. And boy, I hated this book a lot. talk amongst yourselves.
Yeah. I sent some pictures of a few panels of art. There is some really terrible art in this book.
Oh, it's hideous.
Yeah, the look of Clark in particular on some of these panels.
He looks like a gorilla.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't look so bad as Superman later on in the book, but even then I can find some really bad panels. But the beginning is just filled with terrible panels.
Yeah, Rafael Albuquerque is the artist on this book, and I usually really like his stuff, but he has adopted a style for this book that I do not care for. It's like everyone's got sort of a unibrow, you know, the way the eyes are sort of hooded. I do not care for the style he's adopted in this book. It is really off-putting.
Yeah, I am not happy with this as a direction for the Superman books.
It retells Superman's origin and kind of lines up his timeline. Again, I mean, it seems like we're doing this every 18 months now. And I don't think I object to too much that's there. But the direction of the storyline, you know, is really, you know, taking the classic Kryptonite No More storyline and turning it on its head, where Kryptonite is ubiquitous. It's everywhere. It's, you know, and so it's, you know, it's really hard out there, Kryptonian. Anyway,
I feel like there's too many Superman characters right now.
Mm-hmm.
Too many super characters. They've watered it down. So now they need to find a way to weaken the family. So let's just make Kryptonite everywhere and show the characters with broken arms and all these injuries. And Superman glows, apparently.
He's gold now. He's gold Superman.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just don't like this as a direction at all. I am sick and tired of the Kryptonite stories, the weakening him through Kryptonite. That's the least interesting way you can tell a Superman story at this point.
You know, one of the things that really struck me about this book, and I was really looking forward to it. I like Dan Slott. I have Dan Slott issues. I mean, he's friends with the podcast, Dan Slott. So let me clarify. I don't have Dan Slott issues, but I don't enjoy all of his work. And, you know, I checked out on a lot of it a while back, but I was genuinely excited to see what he could do with Superman. He has really done some DC work on the animated DC books in the past that I loved. Some of my favorite comics to revisit are the ones set in the Bruce Timm universe, written by guys like Dan Slott and Mark Miller back in the day. So I was super excited about this book. Then we read the preview on Free Comic Book Day that I really didn't care for. And that really is just like the first couple of pages of this book. It wasn't.
And I really object to that. The Free Comic Book Day book should be stand apart from your other books. It shouldn't just be, okay, well, here's the first, you know, 8 pages of a story you're going to pay for next week.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
But this book really reminded me a lot of Bendis's work on Superman.
Agreed. Yeah.
Like a lot. Like the characters spoke similar. You know, if you had told me that this was the first issue of Brian Michael Bendis's new run on Superman, I would not have second guessed it.
Yeah.
You know, it's very talkative. It's, you know, very, you know, much like here's change for the sake of change, but not really a long-lasting, impactful change. You know, it was really disappointing. And it's disappointing because I am enjoying the regular Superman book by Joshua Williamson so much. You know, and it feels like this is going to get a lot of attention just because it's, you know, Dan Slott coming to DC again. But like, that book is far superior. And I, you know, we talked about the Superman, I think it was issue 750 a few weeks ago, you know, with Lex Luthor and all that, and how much we enjoyed that. So like, it feels like that's just going to be the Superman book for me.
Yeah, I agree. I just thought this book was super weak, and I was hopeful that when they were, you know, realigning the timeline, that they would make a change, and they didn't. They did the same thing that I have hated for a long time now, which is the fortress remains created out of crystals. And, you know, I honestly feel like that has not aged well. You know, I really would like a return to a more Silver Age style Fortress of Solitude. I really hate the Crystal Fortress of Solitude. I hate that it's been that is the thing that survives out of the Richard Donner films and has been just so embraced in the comics. I miss a more Silver Age Fortress of Solitude.
See, that's an area where I don't agree, because I like the crystal building it. I like it being technology from Krypton that builds it.
I like that too. I like that it's Kryptonian technology. I just dislike that it's built out of crystals.
The other thing I wanted to point out in this book, so you guys see at the very back of the book, it has a preview for Supergirl number one. Is it weird that they're previewing a book that came out a week before this book?
Uh-huh.
Oh, one of them must have gotten delayed.
Yeah, usually they preview a book that's coming out the next week. But no, they previewed a book that came out a week ago that was the worst book I read that week. I hated the new Supergirl book.
Oh, really? It's sitting here unread in my library. So I guess that's disappointing.
I didn't pick it up. The Comixology didn't have the previews loaded for it when I was buying my book. So I'm like, you're not getting me, Supergirl. You have gotten me far too many times. So when I couldn't preview it, I'll just have to come back to that. And then I heard you guys going, oh, Supergirl number. So yeah. Yeah. So no. I was disappointed in Superman Unlimited and will not be picking up Superman Unlimited number two.
And I will say, go ahead, Wayne.
Yeah, I was going to go ahead. I was going to move on to the next book.
Oh, I was going to say, I am so disappointed in Superman Unlimited number one. Now, you guys know I don't love every first issue I read, but I give them a second issue, and sometimes it turns it around. I am so disappointed in Superman Unlimited issue one. I will not be picking up issue two.
Yeah.
Same.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, I have really been enjoying Detective Comics. I really enjoyed the recent storyline. And was disappointed to a degree in this next phase of Detective Comics. Detective Comics number 1097, where we get to see a little bit of backstory with Detective Bullock, Detective Bullock. But I thought, and it wasn't that it was a bad story. It was just it was so talky, and it was so meandering in the storytelling. It just didn't feel nearly as tuned as the previous issues were, and that was my frustration. It just didn't sing in the storytelling as the previous issues did.
See, I love the previous storyline. It got me back into Detective. Same. I wasn't reading any Batman stuff, but I loved that storyline, and I loved this issue. I liked that it was a different tone and feel to show that this next arc is going to be different. I loved getting the flashbacks from Bullock and his early days, and the fact that Bullock knows something Batman doesn't. Mm-hmm. That was interesting to me. I just really enjoyed this story. And it got to that end where the big surprise, even though we all knew it was going to be a storyline with Penguin next, was that it's not Bullock, it's Penguin that they've got in their truck. I was disappointed. I wanted to see Batman and Bullock teaming up at this point.
Yeah. I will say I'm probably somewhere in the middle with this book, in that like I don't know that I loved it. I don't know that I disliked it. I think it was, for me, it was the start of the new arc, right? Like, I think the last arc finished strong, and this is very much continuing some of the threads from that, which is, you know, a Tom Taylor staple, right? He plants the seeds, and it's, you know, we've really got a long farm arc in the same way we did with Nightwing. Obviously they switched out the artist for this arc, which his art is not as good. as the prior artist. This artist is Lee Garbett, who I do like. I'm not saying it's bad art. It's just not quite as good as some of the art we had in the prior art. So, yeah, but I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued at the mystery, intrigued to see where it goes. I mean, it's a well-written book in general. So, yeah, I think Detective Comics has been very strong since Tom Taylor took it over. So I'm on board.
Hey, Paul.
Yes, sir.
What's coming out next week?
Well, you know, Aaron.
Sir.
We've been recording this podcast for quite a while now.
Yes, we
have. And he forgot to look, didn't he?
Yeah, you would think that I would know by now to look, right? But, you know, we switched over to Discord and it threw everything all off. But that's okay. I just bought myself enough time to talk about what's
this
coming out next
week. This whole podcast is in Discord right now.
This is discourse. From DC Comics, we get the newest issues of Absolute Wonder Woman Batman, which is continuing the Hush 2 story arc. Absolute Martian Manhunter, the latest issue of Superman, which I just referred to, and the first issue of Mr. Terrific Year 1, which was previewed in some of this week's books.
Are we picking that up?
I don't know.
I want to like a Mr. Terrific book.
I do too. I really do. I will say the cover art was very weak. I need to read the, because there was a preview in one of the books this week. Yeah, I need to read the preview, but the cover art was weak. So
yeah.
We'll get back to you on that.
I did not care for the preview, but I can see it was a taste thing. You guys might love it. I just didn't care for it.
I really want to like a Mr. Terrific book.
I do too. I like the character. Yeah. I just feel like he's got to be written correctly.
I just feel like he hasn't been handled, you know, well, except by Geoff Johns, you know, and other folks who've written Justice Society. But in the books they've tried to break him out into, I'm just like, I don't know. Yeah,
no, I agree.
Okay.
From Marvel Comics, we get the latest issue of Predator versus Spider-Man. Wayne and I really enjoyed the first issue of that book. And from Image Comics, you get the newest issue, G.I. Joe, issue 7. And if you are a fan of classic Energon Universe, the Transformers Compendium Volume 1 comes out, which contains the first 46 issues of Marvel's Transformers book and the Transformers Headmasters, issues 1 through 4. So it's a massive compendium. They actually, I think, did a Kickstarter.
They did.
Or something, if you wanted it in, you know, in print. So that recently came out. So
it's similar to the G.I. Joe Real American Hero compendiums they put out there.
Yeah, exactly. And that was super popular. I mean, Transformers was just as popular.
Yeah. Skybound, right, is doing those.
Skybound.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
next week.
Oh, yeah. Just so you know, they've announced the first six issues, because they're doing one of these stops for each issue. None of them are close to me for the Corpse Tour. And I don't think there are any other particular. Austin, Texas, I think, is the closest to any of us, which is June 20th. And that's not that close to you in Dallas, is it?
It's 3 hours away.
That's not that close in my book.
But it does seem that they might announce more dates.
Yes, they're going to do one. There would be at least one place for every issue. So they've announced the first six issues worth. So that's seven more issues to be announced in the future if they keep their plan. Hey,
did they say which store they're going to be at in Austin?
Austin Books.
Oh, good book. That's a good comic book shop. It's my favorite comic shop in Austin.
Yep. So, but if you're close to LA, in California, New York, Austin, Texas, San Diego, Toronto, Portland, or Annapolis, those are all places the Corpse will be visiting between now and October.
Very exciting. Well, hey, we want to know what you thought about this week's books. What you thought about Andor, and is Dedra your secret favorite? Give us a shout at ideologyofmadness.com, and if we use your comments on the show, you can get a surprise.
You can also hit us up on social media, IOM Geek on Facebook, Instagram. Or X.
I understand that.
Aaron, I don't mean to interrupt you.
I'm sorry.
But speaking of social medias, I have launched a TikTok.
What?
What?
For IOM Geek?
For IOM Geek.
Are you out there dancing on it, Paul?
I am not. Right now, it's just I launched it when I went to Epic Universe a few weeks ago as a supplement to the YouTube channel, just to check it out.
It's got to be short content, so it's just the beginning of each of his videos. It's like
peeps,
peeps, peeps, peeps.
Exactly. But if you're interested in that type of stuff, check us out. We'll probably add more. I just was like toying with it and figuring it out. It's not much. The videos look professional, but they're all done using templates. So don't be impressed. You probably won't be anyway.
I launched our OnlyFans page. So
is it feet pics or is it something more?
It is exclusive paid content of our resident hot ginger, Wayne. So
yeah. I'll go sign up now.
Yeah.
If you pay a lot, then we don't put pictures on there.
All right, guys. Well, we'll do this all over again next week in the Discord.
Gotcha then.
Bye.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of IdeologyOfMadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.